Hey, happy to welcome everyone for the weekly discussion in English medium. Fairly good participation. So before going into the traditional dialogue with the appointed sutta, if anyone is having any other topic or any interview reports or something like that wish to present, we can take few minutes.
Avasarai Bante.
Yeah.
Avasarai Bante, can you hear
yes,
me?
Yes, yes, yes. We can hear.
Yeah, we have received one report, Bante, from this end. With your permission, I would like to present.
You can start with that, please.
Yes, Bante. Dear Bante, I am 15 years old and have been practicing for 3 years. Please advise me. I recently decided to sit down for a pre-recorded guided meditation. Initially, I felt more relaxed as there was another voice and it wasn't just silence that greeted me. I could easily turn my focus to the voice and the instructions it was saying. I focused on the steady tone of the voice and my awareness of it grew bigger and bigger, and it felt like the awareness was diving into it. My awareness of the voice was then gone and it was now on just awareness. During this time, the guided meditation was still playing. However, it did not exist to me as my awareness was just in a room full of awareness. However, all of a sudden, my mind was pulled out of the state. It was not caused by anything. Like a distraction, it just happened. I was then in a daze and I tried to once again focus on my breath, but all of my senses were flooded. My focus began drifting from the voice to the ache in my knees and all my surroundings. Tirvan Saranai, Hasini. End of the report, Bante.
So glad to hear you are 3 years trying to be mindful, still at 15. I can't remember even when I was 15 what the kind of craziness we were playing. We have no records. And so happy. And the second thing is, when you are reading the content, I heard when the orchestra is all playing, the whole hall, all the listeners and everything come to the same vibration. And so much so, suppose one musician never come, but the piano is there or the violin is there, it also starts singing. And the whole world, the hall is going to vibrate, the musical instrument which is not playing still gives the same vibration. So much so, when the Buddha is arose in the world, there's a kind of a vibration. We are just getting the harmony. We get harmonized. And I heard in Norway, there's a national music show, which the lake is prepared like a concave. And within the center of the water, and the stage is floating. And with the stage is floating to the left side, right side, front and behind, the whole lake, people are surrounded by the lake and everyone is singing. It's a kind of musical harmony, exactly the same, when exactly the same instructions are going and you are also following the same thing, and then it is no more distracted. It's the same vibration, same frequency, and it's a vibration. And that the Buddha says, whenever the mind comes to the proper vibration, the proper healing energy, the good vibration, even the body gives the witnessing. Kayena cheyo parama satyam satchi karoti. It start giggling. It start the frills and thrills. Every corner you feel like. And it is being well explained in the third jhana. It says like when the well is completely filled, It's a middle also water, water table also gone up and surrounded by water. And if lotus flower is coming, a bud, in and out, everything so cool. whole well is wet and kind of a cooling idea. Exactly the way sukha, not the piti, piti is kind of adolescence, sukha is kind of a maturity. When everything is happening, that's nature. That's a law of the nature. So you have to just merge with it. There's nothing to fight. And you know, crossing that crossing a water current, you say, Buddha says, not hurrying, not tarrying, I just smoothly cross over. So that means you have given the best harmony, which is not belongs to you. By letter, we can also share a little. That's a literature. That's a aesthetic part. That's a poetic area. So whoever may be meditating, others can get the benefit because that good vibrations. So Venerable Jnanarama used to say, you have nothing to meditate. You have to be with meditators. Then you naturally get the absorption. It's a contagious. It's like corona. If you are living with corona people, whatever the hygiene you have, you will get. So that is why we call Buddha's dispensation, Buddha's asana. So you have to be with it. And then you get the same vibration. So imagine, majority of your society is with the mindfulness and the harmony with the nature and kind of thing. You become a part and partial. You are in the same boat. There's nothing you to do. And the people who are striving never envy. You also can come and join. Why not? It's free of charge. So that's how the Buddha accumulated so much of good merits by all the paramis, so much of aeons. And then dictate. It's called Vashita, or master. He has mastered the situation, so he can dictate. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you be wealthy and happy. You get the blessings. So this is what. So try to share with us, whether with instructions or no instructions. You have to develop good vibrations. And that is the most important. And in the United Nations, mindfulness for environment, they say if you are sitting and meditating among the growing vegetables, the vegetable plants can feel it. So we started that project, growing vegetables with the help of children, and they do walking meditation and sitting meditation among the plants. Then you get harmonized with the growing plants, just like sitting in between the meditation instructions. So music can do the same, or other meditators can harmonize your body, mind, and the environment can do it. So therefore, you must learn the beat. You must learn the rhythm. And you just merge with the rhythm. You become part and partial, less like an orchestra. So my answer is more aesthetic than this thing. So I have to say, good. Anyone is having any comments on this girl's experience?
Master Sananse, thank you for that. I wanted to add one very short quote by a certain teacher, and he said, the lazy man's way to Nibbana is through mudita, because all you have to do is be happy for other people's success.
A sympathetic joy.
Yes. And then you get that happiness yourself, and you can progress. Thank you.
So I am in the high of the peak of sympathetic joy today, because everyone is meditating. So much of monks, wherever I go, I meet the people, those who are meditating. Of course, we have different views. But as far as the meditation is concerned, we are always geared into that, avenued into that. This is the peak time in my life. Because I have never seen earlier so much of meditators. And so much of people are talking the same thing. Mahayana, Theravada, Hindu, Muslim, Tamil, and they become so close, they're friendly, just like blood relatives, wherever they are. Agreed, America? Talk to the mic, will you?
I'm sorry, Bhante, were you saying that like all these different like religious groups are like friends and stuff? Is that what you were saying? Yeah. I guess some places, yeah. Maybe not other places, but
I never get what you are talking about. Talk in English. What are you talking about? You're murmuring.
I said in some places, yeah, they might be friends. In other places, maybe not.
So go to the friend. Where the friends are there? Why were you held going to the other places? You are a fool. You are the fool. Why you are going to that places? Go to the place. That's why you have legs. Charanadharma means you are the moving characters in the life, spiritual life. Select them. And avoid the others at any cost. Don't go to. So Buddha says, Asevana Chabalana, Panditananca Sevana, first and foremost auspicious thing in the life is, get rid of this bloody shit. So why, when you are attracted to into that is your weakness, that is your, how do you call, bad selection. But never mind, if it happened to happen, okay, now you have eyes, you have ears, you have legs, you have to just move, that's called adapting. Adaptation into the environment, that's adapt, you adapt into that. And you select, you just go, example given is the growing plants and the trees and twigs you can see. But the growing roots, it's always going to the nutrients, always go to the darkness, always go to the water. It is never straightforward. Have you seen? Roots, they are always curvy. So season to season is spread in a different way. So it is multifaceted. So growing tree is what is happening within us. What we do is upper part of the tree. The trunk and the thing you can prune and adjust and kind of thing. But the roots... Yeah, it's a root. The root system must be healthy, otherwise the plant won't grow. The root you can check in such a way through mindfulness. Am I getting the good nutrients or am I getting the bad nutrients? It is not belongs to the. It is not accusable to the nutrients. You have to select selective absorption. We are well taught in botany. Selective absorption, and that decide your fruits. Don't go to bad things. That you are a very bad person to go to bad.
I just personally try to avoid getting into these like kind of philosophical debates with other people. That's, I think, one of my policies. As a person, I just try to avoid getting into these like long and pointless philosophical debates with other people. And again, going back to right speech, I think if you've been practicing right speech, it's, you'll find that even if you're in like a very you'd say like a worldly setting anywhere in the world, like you have all these different people around, they have all different beliefs and stuff. If you're practicing right speech, it's really not going to matter what kind of beliefs that they have. You're going to know what to say, what not to say, when to speak, when not to speak, whether to speak at all, you know. And yeah, it's going to be a lot easier to avoid getting into these arguments with other people that we see so often.
It decides. It selects your future.
Yeah, as you
And
saying.
Don't think it is once and for all. Yeah. It has thousands of times you get, thousands of chances you get it. And more and more you get hit with the bad, you get adapted. You are learning the ways and means how to avoid that kind of a situation, but still you have to understand the good place is waiting. The bad can't stop the good place. It is you have to direct. It is called diverting into that. It's called opanaika in Dhamma. Opanaika means Dhamma is leading to good Dhamma, is good leading to good Dhamma, bad Dhamma is leading to bad Dhamma. So good to bad change is what you are talking about. Or bad to good. That we have willpower. We have our own zest. That is called steadfast mindfulness. Steadfast mindfulness. Bad people are associated. Yes, you know it. You are not getting angry with them. But the moment you get the chance, quit. And then when you go to the good people, you do medium and good thing with them. Bad people, you know how to avoid it. That is it, you are working with poisons and kind of thing. Good. Now we can go to the our traditional topic, if there are no any other comments or any other interview reports. Okay,
Sir Pandit, there's no any other interview reports.
Did you read Kalpani's letters?
Bhante, I didn't receive Kalpani's ones.
She has prepared completely one day of growing plants in this area, 47 schools on 7th. So I'm also going to take time. And well organized, everyone is supporting. I just wanted to keep you also informed. Okay.
I will check with her, Bhante.
Okay, we will invite Venerable Buddharakhita to start the point where we stopped last time.
Actually, we finished the last sutta, so we are starting the greater sutta on deployment.
Mahavyuha Sutta.
Yeah. So, again, deployment here means how you arrange arguments, like a battlefield, how a general would arrange his troops. So it's how you deploy your arguments. So again, here the Buddha has created a replica Buddha, a psychic Buddha, and he's the psychic Buddha. This replica Buddha is asking the main Buddha, our Buddha Gautama, questions. And the reason he's doing this is that it's for the benefit of a group of devas that the Buddha is. He's asking these subtle questions that are on the minds of these devas, or to deepen the discussion with the devas. So replica Buddha asks the question, those who are settled in views, who dispute saying this alone is truth, do all of them receive only blame, or do some of them also win praise? This praise is, so then the Buddha answers, this praise is slight, not sufficient for peace. I say there are two fruits of disputes. Having seen this too, one should not dispute. Having seeing as security the stage of non-dispute. Whatever commonplace opinions there are, a wise person does not get involved in them. Why would one uninvolved become involved when he does not acquiesce to what is seen and heard? So this is a question about even if you have an opinion, and if people find it praiseworthy, is it of benefit? So if you establish a view and you receive praise for it, is there any benefit in that? The point is that people mistake views and opinions, and that they get they get praise for it, and they get acknowledgement within society because of their their view, then they think it's good. So this is the question being asked. Just because you're receiving praise for holding opinions and views, is that a good thing? And so the Buddha points out that it may be good or it may not be good. He says that having seen, there are two fruits of disputes. So the two fruits of disputes that he's talking about here is fame or blame, or gain or loss, or it's always like this. There'll always be people for you or against you. That this is just going to happen anyway. So this praise is slight. It's not sufficient for peace. So here always the Buddha is pointing to ultimate truth as being the ultimate goal, that the benefits of ultimate truth is cannot be compared to the ordinary benefits of you have an opinion and you're right, or you have an opinion and it sounds good, you have an opinion and people praise you for it, that this is not important. That it's you know it for yourself, and you don't need to argue it, and you shouldn't get involved in arguments with people who don't know the truth. And So whatever commonplace opinions there are, a wise person does not get involved in them. Why would one uninvolved become involved when he does not acquiesce to what is seen and heard? When he does not acquiesce, when he does not agree to what is seen and heard. So if you know the truth, you know it, and you can't argue with people who don't know the truth. So there's no point. So you should not get involved in this. So this is a great this is a great calming and peace. So he says that he describes this as seeing as security the stage of non-dispute. So here the stage of non-dispute could be taken as that one has become enlightened, or just simply that you understand you understand what it is to be free from disputing. I know Bhikkhu Bodhi likes this translation of non-dispute, but I like to sometimes think about it as freedom from dispute. So when you enjoy peace, when you enjoy calm, and you hear people having mundane arguments, and even if that mundane arguing person is famous or sort of clever in some ways, like, don't get involved in it. Don't disturb your peace. Don't agitate yourself, and enjoy. One should seeing the security in freedom from peace, freedom from dispute. That this is more important than, arguing with people. Why would one uninvolved become involved when he does not acquiesce to what is seen and heard? So here he's pointing to this importance in what is seen and what is heard. We should pay great attention to what is seen and what is heard, to this yathabhuta dasana, that wisdom is seeing things as it really is. Whereas if somebody is not able to see things as they really are, and they have an opinion about things, you can't really discuss things with them, because they have delusion as a basis for their understanding. They have a fundamental issue that they don't see things as they really are, and therefore they're just arguing about a point. And even if it is arguing the right way or in accordance with that truth, it's just an opinion of theirs, and it's not something that they have an insight into. I was thinking about this in terms of when I was reading this, it was occurring to me. You know, what happens if the person is arguing and they're arguing correctly, even if they don't know it's the truth? You know, for instance, they'll say to be charitable, to do good things. And because a lot of religions will say be charitable, do good things, but are they worth sort of arguing with about over this? Not really, because they don't see maybe the point of Nibbana, of striving for existential freedom from suffering, because what they're doing is just going to bring them to maybe good states of being, where they will be reborn in the heavens or something like that. So this person will say, well, this person's led a saintly life. And you say, yeah, it's a saintly life. It's just not a life that will get you out of suffering. It won't get you out of, it won't bring you to Nibbana. It becomes a deeply kind of foolish argument very quickly with a person that they think that their action is supreme, and you're saying not really, like it's just going to bring you to a good rebirth. It's not going to end rebirth. Whereas they will say, you're not really involved enough in society, or you're not charitable enough compared to me. I'm more charitable than you are. And you're like, yeah, it's a good thing you're doing. It's just not going to get you out of suffering. And I'm more interested in this getting out of suffering business. And it becomes like hopeless, because they don't see things as they really are. They don't see that there's rebirth. They don't see that heaven isn't the end goal. You know, it's something like that. So this is what was occurring to me when I was reading these verses yesterday. And so it becomes, it's unsolvable, and therefore we should mind our own business and continue to practice ourselves.
Yeah, that by reading Bhikkhu Bodhis and Buddha Jayanti translation, Buddha Jayanti translation is more lucid. It's more, how do you call, Theravadic kind of a translation. Bhikkhu Bodhi one is general English translation. So I will present the Theravada translation with my limited knowledge on the Buddhism. English. Yekechi me ditti paribbasana idameva satchanti vivadayanti. Sabbevate ninda manvana manvana yanti atopasan sampi labanti tatha. Translated, Sokhiya drushtiya dadiva gena vasana kisi mahanu bamanu kenek me apage labdiya satyaya andi labdiya tuchya ikyane nam ou siyalloma tamanvita punapuna ninda ilavadda. Nohot e drushtiya nimitikota gena prasansa labadda. Very difficult to even put into a sentence because it's a stanza. It says Sokhiya drushtiya dadiva gena mahanu kenek. Taman is taking, my mine is the truth, and that is the this thing, and that his boasting, others are wrong, I am correct. Then others will blame them. You are only a limited mind and you are all telling you are the truth, all the others wrong, therefore others will blame you. Sometimes, yes, I am also having the same view, therefore I am phrasing you. So asking that blaming and phrasing, does it matter? Is it having some many essence or gist? The Buddha says there is something, but it is not leading to Nibbana. Therefore, the whatever you win or whatever you lose, does it lead to relinquishing from the desire? Or leading to Nibbana? There are some partial phrasing and tarnishing. But Buddha says not enough. Not whether someone has phrased you, someone has blamed you, doesn't matter. Are you still looking forward to go to the Nibbana or you are taking it as a to how to get rid of your desire? And that part, in the Bhikkhu Bodhis translation, it says, those who are settled in views, who dispute, saying, this alone is truth. Do all of them receive the only blame? Or do some these also win phrase? This is the phrase of these things are receiving. But how does it gearing to the Nibbana is lost? So that is what you have to... one has to concern. Someone has to refine by the phrase and by blame. One has to refine so that you are more avenued with the Nibbana, more avenued with the relinquishing of your desire. And that is what the Buddha is trying to highlight by this question. And it's very subtle. So earlier I had the great desire of reading books. Reading, and it came to a certain kind of a consummation by I read conspiracy theory. It's full of knowledge, everything is negative. But so much of knowledge. So for a person like me, huge. Ultimately they find the whole knowledge is for negative. So therefore, once I take a book now, I see whether he knows the Buddha rose in the world. They don't know even that. They don't know the Four Noble Truths and writing bestsellers. What's the use? Whatever the scientific discoveries, whatever the warfares, whatever the book writing and business, what is the use if it is not giving a kick toward the understanding of the truth that is completely lost in media today? Utterly lost. Well, luckily this is, we are not bound to give you news. We are just entertaining you. Thank you, you gave me that point. Are we listening to this show just for entertainment? Or does it having some kind of a bearing towards the Nibbana? No. Today, whole education is just a hidden curriculum. Whole law is a hidden agenda. Money, pharmaceutical industry, media, politics, economy, social development. It is cut off you from being alone. Cut off you from going to the forest. Cut you from the sitting under a tree. Cut you from the be with the other meditators. He says, no, it's useless. Come and have a soap opera. Go into the opera house. If you can't go there, you are not a human. You are not social. You are going backward like. So I have no any idea now to enlighten the world, because it is useless, because so much of people 200 years misled. But still I am not, I believe. I see them, conspiracy theory as conspiracy theory, knowledge is as a hate and the news as entertainment, but I go through them and see how it is happening. So whether I get the frame or praise or blame, it doesn't matter. I see how much I can cut across and go to relinquishment, go to the supramundane. That I never lose. That I never lose in meditation, in reading, in teaching, and all the kind of thing. Mind your own business. It appears very selfish. Be mindful and mind your own business. So far, I think I am intact. I am not lost. But appear to be a lot of trends are there. I am multi-direction and multi-diversified. But always try to keep the main thing. The day I become a monk, I ask the teacher, Sabba Dukkha Nissarana Nibbana Satchi Karanathaya, have I forgotten that due to my seniority, due to my knowledge and kind of thing? Then I lost. So therefore I always try to associate beginners. I see the blessing, and because they are very innocent. I cannot. I have to be artificially be innocent. Otherwise, I have enough reason to be phrased and gain and have some seniority and knowledge and kind of thing. So I am not getting disqualified to become a beginner. Anyone is helping me and pushing me into the beginner's mind and that boat, I am very happy. So I will always try to go to the bottom level and try to be with them, and not difficult because they are not rejecting us. Children never reject us. Non-Buddhists never reject us. Cancer patients, they never reject us. Prisoners, they never. And this is, it's very strange, Bhante, coming to us, because we are quite deprived people. But when we go there, a lot of things we can share. So therefore, phrase and gain, it doesn't matter. I mean, people can't live without that. But we have to make them trivial. We have them inert. And keep that your primary object, or the why you become a monk, always intact. Otherwise, you lost the ground. And I call that within the womb, as far as you are in the womb, if you cut off the umbilical cord, finished. The connection to the mother is to the umbilical cord. Am I pronouncing properly the cord? If it is cut, your monkhood is gone. Your humanity gone. So always remember, it's a very dirty thing to have that connection, and when you are parturation, it's a kind of a the placenta and the umbilical cord. You have to cut off and release yourself to become individual. But as far as you are inside the womb, Tathagata Garbha, they call. I have to have the connection. And if that is gone, finished. So therefore, mindfulness, I find as the umbilical cord. Always good or bad, praise or gain, blame. I have this mindfulness intact. I find when I am getting blame, I am heightened in mindfulness. And when I am doing something wrong, I am heightened in mindfulness. Because I have to look whether other people are noticing it or not. So when I'm doing good things, doesn't matter because it is a natural thing, it is happening. So bad things are happening. So when it's happening, be mindful. So therefore that point very difficult to put into words. Because Bodhi would have gone into a hell of a trouble to translate this into the four, one stanza into the four lines, difficult. But the Buddha Jayanti is fairly they have done because they have a negative language, but the English is a positive language, difficult to put into, that we must phrase them. But anyway, there are other translations also. Therefore, whatever the Pali stanza, the translation have diversified ideas. That is what I just wanted to bring into the discussion.
Abhisarai Sumanam, sir?
Yeah.
So this brings up for me thinking about how we can either choose to go towards negativity and arguments which bring up more negativity and looking for, you know, winning people over and trying to becoming involved with disputes and so forth. It all tends to, for me, you know, I can feel that aggravation that can arise when we become involved in these disputes. And I know a person who is very into politics, and this lay person who she says sometimes she just has to turn off the TV and get her mind out of that, all the disputes and arguments on the news and politics. She also meditates, so it's you know, making a choice between becoming involved in disputes and negativity, which disputes always have a seem to have some kind of a fighting and agitation to them, and politics, you know, obviously do, and who's right, who's wrong. So this person can sometimes want to turn off the TV for a while and just leave the TV off and maybe hopefully get back to meditating. And it's like just the choice between going towards truth, which we can experience directly through experiencing reality directly through our senses, and or to choose to become involved with agitation, and sometimes even if you're winning, you're still agitated, you know, because you feel like they're going to catch up with you and you have to defend yourself, and sort of the whole thing of the householder, you know, always having to protect their property and belongings. And so the views are somewhat like that as well. And it's human nature, I think, to want to have a community and have people on your side. And, you know, it's we're social creatures and we need others. So, but people go towards the wrong, you know, they get involved with too involved with that, or too maybe looking for the wrong kind of friends, you know. I noticed when I started to meditate, and I went to a meditation center where I spent a lot of time, and I spent more and more time there, and it felt so good to be amongst people that were thinking the same way and meditating and wanting to go towards the truth and go towards calming down and reasonable, you know, just not becoming argumentative, and we would have discussions and it wouldn't be, you know, like nobody was ever put down or anything. It was like everybody was accepted and just listened to. And, you know, you don't have to, you know, a lot of people would come and visit and they could say a lot of really negative things and be really caught up in the world. But, you know, you just listen to them. And I found recently that, you know, that in talking to people who are lay people, and sometimes can kind of, you can get caught up in that negativity that they're experiencing, and it sort of makes you want to respond in a negative way sometimes. But if you can just experience that person without, you know, just to find the good in the that person and realize that they're suffering, and try to accept them just the way they are. So there's no clinging to views, even of, you know, this is the right way, Buddhism is the right way, you know, and the other person may not, you know, be totally into something else. So, and that's continuing their suffering, but, you know, you can just feel compassion for the fact that, you know, I hope you can find truth. I hope you can stay positive and kind-hearted. So I think that's our, you know, the loving kindness we can give to people in the world, rather than judging them, or, you know, we can also become arrogant in our way that we think we're right, or even just in our own personal views with other people, anybody, you know, we can always take up this feeling of I'm right and you're wrong, and, you know, therefore I don't like you. So there's this... that's where mindfulness really comes into play, I feel, for disputes, and, you know, just to notice, how am I getting caught up right now? Am I getting agitated, or am I, you know, calming down, and just seeing things as they are, rather than trying to change anything or take up a view. Sorry, that went on a little bit long, but thank you very much.
So one comment, that one of the speakers in Sri Lankan the parliament, he was an idiot person. He was an idiot prime minister earlier, and but he was efficient in fishing and the harbor. Ultimately, he became the speaker. Then he told, now I can see two parties are fighting. I have nothing to talk, I am just observing. If someone is blaming you, same time the other party is going to give you an answer, he lost. You have to just wait till the other person is finished the argument, take the notes and ask the time for the speaker and tell, this is what I have to say. Then you can either win or lose. But soon agitated, someone is provoking you, if you are shouting and if you are involved, you lost. So as far as a member of parliament, I was unsuccessful. But as a speaker, I can see the politician is mature enough. If someone is blaming, he just wait, get the points, and after that asking the time for the speaker, can I give an answer because it is something involved, and then he can tell. So therefore he get the blame but still not moved. So he's a better politician rather than reaction. And exactly the same in mindfulness. A lot of other things are coming. Main thing is not to worry. But take into your account, have a short notes, and when the time permits, give the answer without emotionally moved, without getting involved. So that part is in the politics, and the mindfulness is same. But nothing, whether you win or lost, it is leading to Nibbana or not, completely different issue. That's the sutta he's talking about. You may be winning, you may be successfully answering, you may be unmoved and non-coercive, but still it may not be leading to Nibbana. So that is the yogi must understand, beyond the winning and losing, don't miss the bus. Okay, American?
Avasarai Bhante. Thank you for everyone's comments so far. It was an interesting point, Bhante, that you were reading in the sutta. It was something to the effect of, you know, even if you speak a viewpoint and you get praise for it, what is, you know, is there any purpose to that, you know? I find that very interesting personally because nowadays, you know, you'll see in a lot of parts of the world, you know, people will, there are certain, I guess, beliefs that are becoming more popular. And so you'll see people expressing these viewpoints and, you know, they'll get a whole bunch of praise. And, you know, sometimes I feel like when I was, you know, younger, I would sometimes, I feel like from what I can remember, I would say certain things at times almost just to get praise from people. I would say viewpoints that everyone was agreeing with almost just to get praise, like, wow, you know, I'm saying this viewpoint and everyone likes me for it. And that was a very interesting part of that sutta, because you have to think, you know, what is the purpose of you, for one, saying this viewpoint? Are you, you know, doing it because you actually believe in it, or are you saying it because everyone else believes in it? And when you say it, you know that people will praise you for it. So what is your motive behind saying this viewpoint? That's one thing. Two, and I've always, I would say even subtly when I was younger, like a teenager, I became a Buddhist when I was a teenager. And one of the things that led me down the path towards the Buddhist teachings, I would say, and this is related to this part of the sutta, where it was saying, even if you express a viewpoint and you get a whole bunch of praise for it, what's the point of it? When I was younger, even before I became a Buddhist, I always had this kind of subtle belief of, well, you know, actions speak louder than words. And so I would see a lot of things in the world, like, you know, a lot of these beliefs that were becoming more and more popular. I would see ideas or opinions being expressed. And that was great and all. You know, it's not that I felt personally that people were saying some of the right things, but also I was taking a look at people's actions. And I was saying to myself, just subtly, like maybe I wasn't able to put everything together at that age, but just subtly I was like, but that's not right, you know, that you would say, like, you know, the world should be a more compassionate place, but you're still saying, well, we got to go, like, blow up a building to do that, you know, to make the world a more compassionate place. Or, you know, we have to, like, overthrow somebody to make the world a more compassionate place. So for me, it was always, and still is to this day, and the Buddha believed this too, I'm absolutely sure of that, is that actions speak louder than words. So you can say one thing, you can express a viewpoint, it might be the correct thing to say in the world in this day and age, but, you know, your actions, if your actions don't line up with what you're saying, then, I mean, a wise person is going to be able to see that your actions, maybe a lot of people will not be able to fully see through that, but wise people will be able to see that you're saying one thing, but you're doing something completely different. So your actions have to line up with your beliefs. So if you're saying that the world should be a more compassionate place, then you have to be more compassionate yourself. You know, it's you can't say, I can't logically go up to somebody and say, well, the world should be a more compassionate place. These people should have these rights. These people should have these rights. These people should be able to do this, do that, you know, whatever my beliefs are. But I don't have to do those things. You know, just you start doing what I want you to do. You start doing what I believe the world should be like. And you start believing what I believe everyone else should believe in. And just let me continue to be how I am. You know, let me just scream at you and, like, maybe curse you out and, you know, say negative things about you and get into arguments, you know. I don't have to do what I'm saying. Only you have to do what I'm saying. So, you know, there's a lot of, I saw that even when I was younger, there was a lot of that. There was this thing of people expressing viewpoints And they were the acceptable things to say. And it's not that they didn't have good points to what they were saying. It's just that the actions did not line up with what their beliefs were. So they were saying, I want people to be more compassionate, but they were not being more compassionate. So that is, I would say, my comment is most notably what I get from that part of the sutta is, you know, where they were saying something again to the effect of you can express a viewpoint and get a whole bunch of praise for it, but what's the purpose? And my comment specifically on that part of the sutta is, you know, your actions speak louder than your words. So you can say a bunch of things, but you know, if your actions are not in line with your beliefs, then wise people are going to be able to see through that. And that goes into arguments too. That ties into arguments as well. So, you know, you can say like, my view is the right view and your view is the wrong view. I can go around saying, you know, the Buddha's teachings are more compassionate than all of you people in your religions and your beliefs and whatnot. But if I'm going around arguing with people and I clearly have aversion or ill will towards these people, then the only thing that's going to tell people is that the Buddha's teachings are somehow not compassionate, you know? So that is why the Buddha, I think specifically, that's one of the reasons why he is talking about avoiding disputes is, again, your actions speak louder than your words. So the Buddha, you know, didn't have the need to prove that he was compassionate towards all beings. He just displayed it through his actions. It wasn't a thing of where he was going around and telling everyone, hey, I'm more compassionate. Hey, my religion or spirituality is the right way, and you all better just get in line with what I'm saying. He just displayed it through his actions about what he was talking about. He proved himself through his actions. And so your actions speak louder than your words. So that is my comment. Thank you all.
So I summarize everything telling by learning Buddhist gave nothing, because even become a Buddhist, you had this consent in your mind. You are born with that idea. Buddhism is catalyzing it. You have this idea even as a teenage that the actions are more louder than the words. But after becoming Buddhist, you are catalyzing the same. So we are born with this good idea without a religion. You became a converted Buddhist, but we are born Buddhist, but that ism is not the part. We are born with good characters. Everyone. The religion is the one sectarianism happens. So when you go and talk to the truth, talk to your original, your natural, your, how do you call, directed dispositions, we are good people. Everyone is good. Unless otherwise we are arguing. Still you can argue and still polish it. But we have the element. I call it a birthright. Mindfulness is a birthright. Everyone is born with mindful. We are not giving mindfulness. We are catalyzing mindfulness. So therefore Buddhists can say it is Buddhist. Other people can say it is a humanistic. So when we successfully give the mindfulness, they say, Bhante, you gave nothing. We had it. But you just catalyze it. Then I told, do it for another one person before your death. Share it, because everyone is good. Everyone is human, is man is good. It is, we have become evil during the class fight, the Karl Marx says. And Isaac Newton says, when the things are moving, it is always straight. In the space, when things are moving, it is always straight, unless otherwise hit with someone. The Buddha says, Pabhasaramidam bhikkave chittam. O monks, the mind is lustrous. Not with due to meditation, not because you are Buddhist. But it's covered with little bit of dust. And that dust particle, that very thin, grease particle is making so much of dispute, because you can't penetrate through. Once you penetrate, what a beautiful world, what a beautiful people. Externally they are disputing, but internally we are the same. So therefore, by becoming Buddhist, you gain nothing. That is what I heard.
Sadhu, thank you, Mahathero and Mahasangha, for the comments. I also appreciated yours, Sumana. It was very kind of authentic. I appreciated hearing that. One question I had for the community, whoever would like to answer, are there's kind of these, there's a lot of, intersecting points in the Dhamma. One of them being not getting kind of engrossed in praise and blame, gain and loss, pleasure and pain, and the worldly Dhammas. But at the same time, there's a lot of injunction to actually take the praise and blame of wise people seriously and to listen to them, to get guidance and know when we're doing wrong and to be happy when we're doing good. And at the same time, we can also see that people that we consider wise in the world sometimes disagree on what's right and wrong, even within Buddhism. And so, just as an open question for the floor, if anyone can kind of answer how to navigate that area of not being overcome by praise and blame, but at the same time, listening to what it has to say and who it's coming from, and how we can allow that to guide us, especially when there are different kind of viewpoints coming in. So I would just leave that for anyone.
I would like to comment first. Yes. Because as when we are learning the Chula Viva Sutta, that idea crossed me. Why good people are arguing on the religion, that's on the ethics. And I see the book, Daniel Kahneman. How do you pronounce Kahneman? The book you recommended. The subtitle of the book is Why Good People Are Arguing on the Religion and the Ethics. Politics. So that we try to be good people, but when you go there, they are also arguing. So why? So what is the meaning of becoming a good? So I took that into the Dhamma talk in the down. I took that in the Kadwila also. Then I told that even you become good, you are arguing. So then what is the truth? What is the use of becoming good? But I am not telling that Daniel Kahneman is enlightened being. But he taken this as a topic of the book. Why within the Buddhism sectarianism? So by becoming mindful family, we say we are interfaith. But as a Nisarani, we are not interfaith. We just we have something, a message to you, is mindfulness for the Buddhist. And many people are coming. So therefore, this area, I have one part of my life telling interfaith and talking with the people and telling nothing to argue, we are good people. The other side, this is, there's a special message from the Buddha. So I have the outer bimodal, the personality, right brain and the left brain. And when I read Kahneman, I hate that at the beginning. But when I read the Chula Viva Sutta, why good people are arguing on the politics and religion? Still today. And that argument is within me, not among the people, not among the community, within myself. Even I become good, I have self-criticism. I have inferiority. I have ethical criticism towards me. And I find when in the discussion, everyone is entertaining that bloody criticism. So we are all in the same shit. So therefore, it's a good for the argument to say that we are brothers. We are sharing. We are really in the mess. But we know we are in the mess. Sometimes people say we are good people. Or sometimes we say we try to be a good person. But whatever may be, this dispute is there. I don't know whether it is available in the animals. They can't talk. They don't have sign language. So they may be better off. But anyway, still they are fighting. So therefore, we being human, so sharp in communication, nothing purified, nothing gained, still we are in the dispute. So it's a good point to write a book upon. Good PhD topic, someone to do.
Just a quick, I think, a comment on Venerable Sudhira's question. I think, personally, I think good people differ on viewpoints because people have different values. Like some people want to be isolated from society and go to a cave, but other people think that you can like still contribute to the world and like start a sati pasala. And so I think these values are arbitrary as well. It's I think it's arbitrary.
So how does that arbitrary situation helping you to become Nibbana, go to Nibbana? The arbitration, how does leading you to purification, how does it leading to you less and less desire? So that is the thing you have to assimilate, you have to make use this arbitration, external, but internal also such a thing. And how can I make use to go to Nibbana is the thing related to me. It is the thing pragmatic to me rather than external argument that we can share. That is what the answer of the Buddha, the first this thing, the phrasing and gaining, it doesn't matter. It is not reducing your desire. It is not leading to you the desire. So therefore this phrase and gain is there, yes. But it is not sufficient enough for you to go to the relinquishment. So therefore Buddha never consider this phrase and gain as a praise and blame as a two significant things.
Yes, having thank you, Mantis, and thank you, Mahathir. Having given it some thought, it possibly what it is or part of the answer is that there are different kind of approaches to the Dhamma that might not always take the same emphasis on certain things, like say samatha or vipassana, or more community oriented, or more seclusion oriented, more maybe sutta study, more practice. And so, even though these people and different groups kind of all speak towards the same goal, and they will hopefully have their views kind of within the scope of the Dhamma Vinaya, there are wide enough kind of divergences between approaches that you can feel like you're being blamed by some of them and praised by others. And I guess we all just have to find our way within that to some extent or another. And that's really the only answer I can really think of. Not the only answer, but part of it.
Vasarai Bhante, thank you, Mahasangha, for all the comments. And I would say the last comment that I would have is related to Mante's question here that he just asked. For me, I would say I would agree. You know, there are a lot of, even within the scope of Dhamma, there are a lot of different approaches to the Dhamma and different beliefs about how to approach the Dhamma correctly. And I would agree that we have to, in a sense, you know, find our way through it all. And again, you know, back to my comment earlier, for me, one of the things that I always look at is, you know, what is the person's actions? You know, what are their actions like? You know, if, I mean, you can say anything to anyone, but, you know, again, if your actions are not lining up with your beliefs, then a wise person will be able to find fault with that. And so I always look at the person's actions, and I think that I have found, for the most part, good teachers and good mentors over the years whom I don't want to jump to conclusions, but I believe that I can see the Dhamma in their heart when they speak and when they interact with others. I strongly believe that I can see the Dhamma in their heart when they speak and when they interact with others and, you know, in their actions and all of that stuff. So that's mainly what I look for, you know, when somebody like admonishes me or, you know, corrects me. And there's nothing wrong with that. We need correction sometimes. We need admonishment. But I just try to see, you know, the person's actions, who they are, you know, what is their kind of like personality like, or where is the motive? You know, what is the motive for saying this? I'm just observing their actions. You know, are they? And I've been admonished several times before, but it's just where you know, what is the person's actions? What is their motive? You know, and you know, when you have wisdom, I think it's easier to perceive this stuff. You know, what is the motive? You know. And then also be able to look at yourself using the same wisdom, saying, you know, maybe I do need to, you know, change my viewpoint on that. Maybe I do need to not say that. Maybe I do need to do something differently. And so, yeah, actions speak louder than words, as I was saying. That's my slogan today. Yeah. Yeah.
So you are born lucky in other sense. Even whether you become Buddhist or not, you have that seed. The Buddhism just filed, just refined it, or your teachers refined it. So you are just praising the Buddhism and the teachers, but you have your own this thing, seeds. So that if you can address into that, you all are good people. So now we have to conclude. Many people contributed. Thank you very much for the making the argument very lively. Many thanks to America. Thank you very much for the participation.